Eileen, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to the programme. We're discussing the state's role in the provision of education in this country tonight. It follows yesterday's ruling by the European Court of Human Rights that the state was responsible for protecting Louise O'Keefe when, as a child, she was abused by her teacher, Leo Hickey, at Dundero National School in County Cork in 1973. With me tonight are Labour TD and former primary school principal, Eoin O'Riordan, secondary school teacher, Irish Times columnist and member of the Iona Institute, Breda O'Brien. Colm O'Gorman is Executive Director of Amnesty International, and Dr. John Murray is Lecturer in Theology at Mater Dei Institute and a Director of the Iona Institute. John, you stepped in at the last minute because our original fourth guest was going to be Father Eamon Conway, but we had technical problems with our studio in Limerick, so thank you for that. Yeah. Before we get into the substantive discussion tonight, I want to mention the fact that over the past number of days, RTE issued an apology and made a financial settlement to you, Breda, and to a number of others, including the Iona Institute. And this followed allegations made on the Saturday Night Show on television 2 weeks ago during an interview with Rory O'Neill, who's better known as drag queen Panty Bliss. Now, RTE have not issued a statement to us about this matter for our programme tonight. But Breda, as far as you're concerned, has a line now been drawn under this?
Yes, I think it's really important that we have a rational and a calm debate and that people don't, reduce it to hurling insults at people. That would close down debate. I think RTE left its standard slip in that regard, but they were big enough to come forward and to apologise. And I'm certainly very pleased with that, very pleased to accept the apology and to move forward.
Colm O'Gorman, as an openly gay man, what do you make of all of this?
Well, to be honest, I'm rather stunned by where all of this has gotten to. And I don't understand how we're ever going to have a reasoned or reasonable debate if we can't challenge each other's viewpoints and even begin to question what those viewpoints might be based upon. As it happens, I didn't see the programme, but when I saw it being reported and some of the comments being attributed to Rory in the programme, I was lucky enough to grab it before it was on foot of legal action by Breed and others removed and censored from the public airways. So I went in and I listened to it. And I have to say, I thought it was one of the most considered, inclusive, insightful explorations of how we are all capable of holding views that are discriminatory and that can cause us to make statements that are hurtful, that are damaging and that are destructive of other people. And what I heard Rory say is that we're all capable of holding homophobic or racist or xenophobic views and that we occasionally need to be able to check ourselves. Now, I think that's a really important discussion that we need to have. You know, to be honest, I don't understand why anybody feels enormously insulted by being accused of being homophobic. I'm a gay man and I've certainly been guilty of holding homophobic views, both views that I held about myself, but also views I held about other sections of the LGBT community and other people who lived lives in ways that perhaps I didn't understand.
You're saying we're all capable of bias.
We're all capable of bias. We're all capable of holding views that are based on discriminatory views or internalised bigotry that we've taken on in other ways. And I simply do not understand how challenging people to examine the basis upon which they put forward certain arguments is defamatory. And, you know, equally, quite frankly, I don't think people have a right, I think, to express views that other people might be offended by. Nobody has a right not to be offended. And I will defend Breda's right and anybody else's right to say things that I find offensive. But I think I also have a right to name them as offensive and to seek to have a clear, rational, reasonable discussion about that.
Do you want to come back on that, Breda?
If it had been a case that it was talking about, in general, about us all examining our consciences, I don't think that I would have been, and other people would have been, in discussions with RTE. What it was about was naming a specific individual who was not there to defend herself and another individual who was not there to defend himself. It was claiming bad faith on their part that my position, which is that a child, where possible, should be reared by their own mother and father, is now deemed homophobic commentary. RTE obviously felt that they had something to apologise for. And the reason that they did so is because the legal definition of homophobia is that you have a fear and loathing and suspicion of people who are gay, which is an appalling thing to throw at somebody. And it was then compounded later on by people in the Irish media, in their columns, saying that people who are against marriage equality, if you want to use that term, that people who are against that are people who are responsible for gay people being beaten, murdered, fired from their jobs, and that there should be a defamation watchdog set up so that people couldn't express these views. Now, this is very far from a rational and calm debate. This is actually going way into the territory of saying that we will declare your views out of order before you even begin. And I don't think the Irish people want that. Like during the during referendums regarding abortion, people were immoderate on my side of the fence. And I always called them out when they were, when they used appalling expressions. I think we have a right in this debate to have the same level of respect, mutual respect, and that you don't label people and that you don't dismiss their good faith. And really, I think I came here tonight to talk about Catholic education. I think it would be really good if we got onto that debate.
Well, just briefly, because we do want to move on.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think this has been a very, very damaging incident. And I really do think RTE need to explain the basis upon which they felt entitled or required to pay damages from taxpayer funds on the basis of this. If this was indeed defamatory, then the rationale or the basis upon which RTE believed this it was defamatory need to be explained. And I really wonder how we're going to be able to have a debate in an upcoming referendum on marriage equality, for instance, if those of us on a particular side of it can't challenge the views of others that we believe are based on discriminatory or bigoted viewpoints. Now, in this debate, I am routinely accused of holding bigoted viewpoints towards the other side. My response to that, if I'm accused of being anti-religious or anti-Catholic, is not to go, that's appalling, that's insulting, how you can suggest that. It's actually sit down and reflect whether or not I am carrying such a bias. And I think that's a mature, reasonable and responsible thing
I
to do.
And on the basis
of this settlement, are we next going to see somebody who says, for instance, that I believe a woman's place is in the home, or that I believe migrants who seek to come here from Africa are simply trying to exploit us and are culturally different, will it be defamatory to accuse them of being misogynistic or xenophobic? So, is that the basis upon which we're going to move forward?
Just very briefly, because I want to move on.
No, it won't be very brief, because that is not fair. And what he has just said there has actually exposed what is going on here. He sees saying that a child has a right to be reared, where possible, by her own mother and father, in the same light as people who are misogynistic.
Didn't
or
say
people.
That.
Colm, you've spoken for a long time on this.
I didn't say that, though.
Am I going to be allowed to speak?
Sure, but I didn't say that.
May I speak?
Yeah, of course.
This debate was supposed to be about Catholic education, not about me saying that I have stopped beating my wife, if you'll pardon the expression. This is supposed to be about, you cannot have a rational debate. It's the same, you cannot have a rational debate where people's good faith is impugned. And that is what is going on here. And instead of actually looking at trying to create an atmosphere where people can speak to each other in reasonable terms, I would never call you a bigot. I would never assume bad faith on your part. I have never, if I ever have, I apologise now for it. To my knowledge, I have never accused somebody of bad faith in a debate, in any debate that I have been in. I simply want the same for me and for people that feel the same way as I do. And we cannot have that if people are going to be defamed when they open their mouths.
Just very, very briefly
to say one thing. I don't assume bad faith on your part, Breda. That's the crucial point that you're missing. For me to ask that other people,
Colm,
when
it's
they,
not about
when
you,
they,
it's what happened
they,
on the Saturday
when
night
they express,
show.
For me to ask that when other people express views that I find gravely offensive and gravely wounding, that I ask them to examine the basis upon which and to reflect upon the basis upon which, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about in this debate generally, the basis upon which
no
they make those
about
comments.
That, Colm. What
is
I do
not,
have a problem
is not
when
suggesting,
you step,
is
say,
not
I don't
suggesting
have the right to a good name.
You have your right to a good name and you have your right to express your opinions. And I have my right to express my opinions about your opinions.
Okay.
And the only person who's preventing those opinions from being discussed is you when you launch defamation proceedings.
Okay, we're going to leave it there because we want to move on and to have our substantive debate tonight, which is about the role of education and the role of state in our education system. And we're basing this on yesterday's judgment from the European Court of Human Rights in the case of Louise O'Keefe. She finally won her case against the state, that the state did fail in its duty to protect her as a child when she was sexually abused by her teacher in 1973. It's been a long and a torturous road for the 46-year-old Cork woman. She remained dedicated to her cause of taking on the state, and eventually she prevailed. Donal O'Herlihy looks back at her battle for justice.
By the time Louise O'Keefe was first noticed on our airwaves, it had been 33 years since her abuse at the hands of Leo Hickey, her school principal, at the age of 9. 8 years had passed since Hickey was convicted. Little did she know, but a monumental legal battle that would last a further 8 years was about to begin. She had just lost a High Court case claiming that the state was liable for her abuse because the person who abused her worked for them. And she was on the news at one.
I basically did not prove that Mr. Hickey was an agent of the Department of Education, which essentially means that they were not his employer.
Is that because he would have been employed by a board of management?
A manager who would have,
it would have been the local PP or something?
Yes, on behalf of the bishop. The Department of Education paid his salary. They're now paying his pension. They also, the fact that no teacher can teach without recognition from the Department of Education.
And that was on the point of justice. But there was also the cost of taking the case in the first place. And that was estimated to be €500,000.
Looking at today's judgment, where the department had been awarded costs, is just astronomical, to be honest, and not something that is obviously something I can take lightly, and is something that basically I cannot afford as a separated mother.
6 days later, when the dust had settled a little, it seemed the enormity of the sum that she owed had dawned, and the state wanted it back, despite the utterances of politicians.
The words spoken in the Shannon and the Dáil by both Mary O'Rourke and Aunt Taoiseach Bertie Ahern were welcome, but I would further welcome a commitment from them with regard to the waiver of the costs. It is a stress.
But no such relief came for Louise O'Keefe. In fact, for 2.5 years, €500,000 bill hung over her. A Supreme Court appeal offered some hope that the burden of justice might be corrected and the burden of her debt might be relieved. But in Christmas week 2008, this hope withered. The Supreme Court had upheld the High Court ruling. She still owed the state the money.
There's nobody responsible for what happened to me as a child. There's just simply no responsibility. There has been more support for Hickey than there has been for me from the department. It's outrageous. As you've seen in court, they immediately sought their costs at a time when we're looking forward to Christmas. I really don't know what I'm going to do. At the very least, I'd hope that they would not continue to seek those costs, and I would beg and plead with them to waive all costs. I have to, for the sake of my children and myself.
Why did you take it this far, Louise?
I had to. One of the reasons I took the case was because something happened to me that shouldn't have. I was abused as a little girl. It was wrong. When a wrong is done to a child, there should be responsibility accepted. Why the department could not and will not accept that responsibility is beyond me. I had to try. I had to do my best. I believed what I was doing was the right thing to do. And even with hindsight, I would do it all again because I was wronged.
It was May 2009, having lived with the worry of the state's massive legal bill for over 3 years, that the courts finally ruled that she didn't have to pay it.
Relieved. It will be a huge relief, both to myself and to both of my children, because it is something that has been extremely worrying for us, and it has been a very long chapter, but we look to the future. I would hope to be getting on the next train, and I'm looking forward to getting home and getting a great big hug from both my son and daughter, and we will celebrate tonight, even if it's only a cup of tea in the kitchen, but we will celebrate.
And that would have been enough for most mere mortals, but Louise O'Keefe wanted something deeper. She wanted justice, and she was going to go to Europe to get it. Maeve Lewis from 1 in 4 was amongst many who stood back in admiration at this most extraordinary of women.
Yes, I have the absolute utmost admiration for Louise O'Keefe.
And I think it's outrageous that the safety of Irish school children may now depend on one woman who is prepared to tenaciously fight for the principle that the state must be responsible for the protection of children in Irish schools. She has enormous courage and, you know, she's been living under the shadow of legal proceedings for years and, as you say, could have lost her home and yet has decided to take this very brave move.
The case was heard last year and, yesterday, after 8 years in the courts, relentless legal battles and her own state pursuing her for eye-watering amounts of money, Louise O'Keefe finally got what she set out to get. Summed up in one three-letter text on her solicitor's phone.
Just got a one word, win, which was...
He's won?
Yes.
Congratulations. Such good news for the children of Ireland. It really is. It's not just me. It's children attending our schools at the moment, the children who will attend the schools in the future.
Louise O'Keefe speaking yesterday at the end of her long battle for justice against this state. Eoin O'Riordan, this state intimidated this woman. They fought her all the way and they still haven't apologised to her. It's pretty scandalous, isn't it?
I have incredible admiration for Louise O'Keefe and what she's done. And I think this judgment is going to have far-reaching implications into the way Irish education is structured. Now, I know the Cabinet is going to discuss it next Tuesday and I think something will come from that, I would imagine. My own personal view is that I'm not in any way surprised that the European Court of Human Rights came to this conclusion. You can't have a state... I mean, what we have in Ireland is not really a state education system, even a state-funded education system. So, you know, when you go for a job in a Catholic school, as I've done before, it's the chairman of the Board of Management tends to be the local Catholic priest. And your appointment is then sanctioned by the Archbishop or the Bishop in whatever area that you're teaching in.
But is it not galling, Eoin, to hear the Taoiseach that talking about his admiration for Louise O'Keefe, saying this case has gone on for such a long time? He's part of a government, the deputy prime minister of a government that sent a team of solicitors, lawyers, barristers to Strasbourg to argue the state's case.
I can tell you honestly, Audrey, the deputy prime minister of this country, Taoiseach Eamon Gilmore, I am quite confident after the cabinet meeting on Tuesday and in the cabinet meeting will make his views known on this, and after the cabinet meeting we'll have a strong statement from government as to what we feel about this situation.
But why couldn't he or Rory Quinn come out yesterday and apologise? Just apologise.
Because you know the way these things work. It's a cabinet decision. These things have ramifications. I would love, of course, as an ordinary member of the public, regardless of my membership of the Labour Party or as a TD, I would love the immediate reaction to be an apology, straight up. But that's not the way things work because, you know, the judgment has to be studied. The cabinet makes the decision. But I am absolutely confident that what she has achieved now is a judgment that will have ramifications right throughout the education system and the demarcation between where the state starts and where the church ends is going to be quite clear from now on. Because, you know, you cannot have a system where, as I went through talking about the appointment of teachers and all the rest of it, you can't have a system where, you know, the state pays for teacher, sets the curriculum, rebuilds the building, and then has a handoff attitude when it comes to everything else. That's not good enough, and this judgment proves that.
Colm O'Gorman, you have worked with Louise O'Keefe during your time, I think, in 1 in 4. What is your assessment of the government's response to this?
Well, I think we can't just talk about this government. I think we have to talk about the past government as well. I remember when Louise lost her case in the High Court. And I remember sitting back and thinking, you know, Mr. Justice Eamon de Valera delivered his ruling. And I remember watching Mary Hanavan, who was Minister for Education at the time, come out on camera and say, on foot of a ruling in which the High Court of this Republic found that the Department of Education and Science had no responsibility or no role in guaranteeing the welfare of protection of children in Irish state-funded schools. And you would imagine that any, you know, right-thinking political leader would have come out and said, that's an appalling gap in our protection system, in our lines of responsibility and accountability. We must do something about that. No such thing. Minister came out and said that the High Court of it had found that every state-funded national school in the country was a private institution and that in effect it was nothing to do with the department or with the government or with her. And they continued to pursue the case. And the State Claims Agency wrote to every other person who would launch similar actions against the state, threatening them with the recovery of costs. So the state vindictively pursued a woman who, as an 8-year-old child, was subjected to cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment, as now established as a fact in law by the European Court, for her temerity in asking them to be accountable. It was disgraceful. And I do think, in relation to the current government, you know, I've no doubt at all about the fact that Rory Quinn and Eamon Gilmore and indeed other members of government from both parties in government would like to apologise. But I think it says something about the state of our system that they don't feel able to, after a finding in fact at the European Court of Human Rights. This is now not in dispute. This state is responsible for the fact that an 8-year-old child was subjected to cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment and was denied a remedy every year since by this state. She was brutalised and victimised as a child, and this state repeated that brutalisation and victimisation up until her case went before the European Court and the European Court made this ruling. We should all be very ashamed about that, and we should all be very angry about it.
It's not a fair point, Eoin, that in terms of the actions of the state versus the words of the state, they're inherently contradictory, because all the time, after all these reports that we've had, the state says, you know, children first, we must protect the children, they're our responsibility, never again. And yet their actions say something completely different.
Well, the problem with Irish education, you know, the very first conversation you had here, which I wasn't involved in, kind of is part of the problem, because you cannot have a discussion in Ireland about the Irish education system without people going off in all sorts of directions and getting very precious about territory and all the rest of it. And I completely agree with your point, because when it comes down to it, I mean, when I became a principal first, there's a chap around the corner in a neighbouring school called Mark Candon, who told me that every decision you ever make in your school, if you strip back that decision and at the centre of it is a child, then you'll always be okay. People might argue with you, they may disagree with you, but they'll never attack your integrity. Very little of what we do in Irish education has anything to do with children, because there's always a vested interest, be it the patron body, be it something about geography, be it a teacher union, be it a parents body or whatever. Very rarely do we actually talk about what is best for the child. It generally comes down to what's best for the patron, or what's best for a union, or what's best for somebody else. And that, I think, this judgment hopefully will begin a conversation in Ireland, without people being so precious and throwing solicitors' letters around the place, is that we can actually have a discussion about Irish education and what is actually best for children.
Do you agree with that, Dr. John Murray?
I find it amusing that the politician wants to blame everybody else except the politicians for the situation. I don't see how this can be blamed on the church or the patrons or the teachers or the unions or the schools. I think it's a bit unfair to say that in schools very little is done, you know, with the child at heart.
I didn't say that either.
You know, well, I think you did.
I said
when decisions are made, overall, the child is not at the centre.
No, hold on. No, don't misquote me, because let's be very, very careful about the way that we, you know, quote people and say what they're saying, because what I said was quite nuanced. Now, maybe you're not used to that, but what I said was quite nuanced, because what I'm actually saying is that overarching decisions in Ireland about education policy rarely have the child focused fundamentally at the centre of it, because of all the other vested interests. And you go to Finland, you ask about their fundamental education philosophy, they'll say equality, and it's agreed right across the board, regardless of your
okay,
political...
Okay, that's very clear.
No, hold on a second. The fundamental education philosophy in Ireland is choice, parental choice. That's it. That's what we stand for. Children aren't involved in that. It's about parental choice. Now, that's my point. My point is that the overarching decision-making when it comes to what is right or wrong or values in education rarely, at the fundamental heart of it, have a child.
Well, I would think that's not a very good reflection on what's been done on curriculum, for example. In the last few decades, what's in the Education Act, what happens in schools up and down the country every day of the week, I think that certainly there's lots of room for improvement in the state. The responsibility of the state has been highlighted by this case, very rightly so. And the state has been found wanting, and I think there's been lots of improvements made by the state since then, and I think that's where we have to focus our attention now. It's about whether the policies in schools and the structures that are there and the attitudes people have and so on are good enough for the safety and for the well-being of children. And I think that it's not enough just to say that everything in Irish education is just about parental choice. That's one very important aspect of it, of course. But there's lots of other aspects to it. And there's lots more that we can do, for sure. I'm not going to say, let's just stay the way we are. There's lots of people in Irish education, and I'm hoping that there'll be people in Irish politics as well who are concerned, and in Irish society who are concerned about lots of different aspects. I mean, there's been a lot of debate lately about the junior cert and about, you know, what's at stake there, what's education about. And in terms of primary schools, there's a lot of people who are very concerned about children and their safety and so on in primary schools. So,
Breed O'Brien, do you take any of Eoin O'Riordan's point that there are too many other vested interests get in the way of the child?
I'm fascinated by the idea that parental choice would get in the way of the rights of the child, because I'm not just a teacher, I'm a parent. And when I want to choose a school, I want to choose a school that will nurture my child. So I don't see this dichotomy between parental choice and children's choice. The Children's Ombudsman, who are the majority of the complaints made by? The advocate of the child, the parent. So parents are not in opposition to their children. There is a very child-centred ethos, particularly in our primary schools. We've work to do in our secondary schools because of the pressure of a very academic system. There's a very child-centred ethos in our primary schools. And the inspector's reports, the Inspector General's report in 2013 said wonderful things about it, that primary schools are found to be managing their pupils well and the vast majority of parents were happy with their child's school. I'd love to name another institution in Ireland that could actually say that, that the vast majority of the people that they are serving are happy. And it just doesn't happen. And it was very clear from the European judgment, your listeners might want to Google paragraph 150, where they said, this is not a judgment on your system. This is not a judgment on whether your patronage system is good or bad. Mm-hmm. It's a judgment saying no matter what your system is, you have to protect children. And since 1973, the assumption has been that when it suits the department, they'll put their hands onto education, so they control everything, the curriculum, you know, the qualifications of teachers. Mm-hmm. But when it doesn't suit them, those people over
That's
there.
That's a fair point, Eoin, isn't it? In this case, it was ultimate state failure, abject failure.
And, Audrey, could I make one other quick point and let Eoin then? And they pleaded the learning curve. Mm. This is the one that the church was accused of hiding behind. The idea that shouldn't have. But it was acceptable for the state, having bashed the churches around the head for having hidden behind it, to go out and play that card. We didn't know. We couldn't possibly have known that a principal would have been abusing a child in 1973. This was an outrageous, outrageous statement on the part of the state. But it's not about the church-state relationships and not about the patronage of the schools. It's about a failure by our government to protect children.
Yeah.
Well, again, my point about parental choice was completely misinterpreted, and I hope it wasn't deliberate. The point is that when it came to the overarching ethos of Irish education being about choice, it is when it comes down to patronage. Nobody's suggesting, and I of course am not suggesting, that what happens in Irish schools and in Irish classrooms isn't child-centred. Of course it is. And to shift the argument to make it sound as if I'm suggesting that, it's deliberately missing the point and again trying to skew what I'm trying to say. At the heart of this case is an 8-year-old child who is abused. And nobody was willing to take responsibility for it. Now, I have at no point said that the state wasn't culpable. I believe absolutely the state was culpable. But the problem is that where and it still happens in Irish schools to a large degree, is that where the rights and responsibilities of the state and where the rights and responsibilities of the church collide or clash or merge or overlap, there still seems to be a slight sort of confusion to a degree.
But there shouldn't be, should there? I mean, it's the state.
There isn't now. I mean, the European Court has made that very, very clear. And Breda makes a very important point here. The court did not find that there was a problem with the notion that the state might decide to provide education services by engaging with other parties who would ultimately deliver those services. But what it did say is if you're going to do that, you cannot abdicate responsibility for what happens to people within those services. So the state has ultimate responsibility and a positive obligation to ensure that nobody within the state suffers cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment, and that if they do, they have access to a remedy. And it was on that basis that the European Court found against the state. But in relation to the idea that things have fundamentally changed, the state defended this case in the European Court. Mm. So the attitude hasn't changed, John. That's the point. Whatever about, you know, we want to feel that we moved on, the state's primary, or the system of the state, whatever about political leadership, because that changes, the reality is the systems of the state, where real power rests within the state, it makes decisions about its obligations to the people in this country that are not based upon how do we meet those obligations in a positive way. It's how do we make sure that we're not held accountable when we screw up. There's never an approach adopted, it seems to me, in Ireland, where we approach issues like education or health or any area of what we would call economic and social cultural rights, where the state says we have clear responsibilities under international law and indeed based in our political traditions in this state, to deliver certain services in a way that respects and recognises the rights and dignity of all people. And in how we do that, we'll make policy decisions. But it is the obligation and responsibility of the state to guarantee the outcomes and the experience of people who access those services. Instead, what we did was we farmed out responsibility. And let's be clear about one thing. The state was also captured by very, 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 very powerful forces at a time when the Catholic Church was particularly powerful in this state. By God Almighty, it wasn't going to let anybody else get their foot in the door and have a role in education. And we've seen that history. Now, that's changed. And it's commendable that that's moved on. But that's part of the story. A church that wanted absolute authority and a state that wanted no responsibility. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of it all, an 8-year-old child is raped and abused. And 39 years later, she finally gets vindicated, not before an Irish court, not because of the act of an Irish political leader or an Irish political system or an Irish or the provisions of an Irish constitution, because of a European court. Now, when are we going to stop being found wanting in that regard by the European court? When are we going to fundamentally re-examine and recheck our systems of law, of service delivery, of provision, of how we provide for, protect and defend the rights of people living within this state in a way that means we positively approach our responsibilities rather than brutalising and victimising people we fail? Because that's what this state continues to do.
Breda.
I mean, I wouldn't disagree with much of that. The only thing is I'd like to reassure parents out there that they're... Insofar, you can never guarantee that a child will be absolutely safe anywhere. But insofar as you can set up structures to make that as safe as humanly possible, Irish schools are doing that. In fact, they've gone... Irish Catholic schools have gone much further than the Children First guidelines. They've built on them. They use them, but they've built on them. So there's mandatory reporting if it's a priest or a lay employee that's involved. The bishops are on record saying that they want this put on statutory footing. In fact, it's the church at this stage is actually far ahead of the state in many ways. And the good practice that is being there is not being recognised, it's not being recommended. It's the same thing at the local level. This local school is working well, the parents are delighted, the child protection is in place, but they're being let down by the leadership. In this case, the leadership of our state.
I think there are many elements to that, but I think the most crucial point that we need to constantly hammer home on the basis of this judgment is that up until this judgment, this state did not believe that it had a responsibility to guarantee the protection of children in state-funded schools. And indeed, therefore, I mean, because it's not limited to schools, you know, the implication of this ruling is much bigger than education. It establishes very clearly in a judgment of the European Court, which is binding, that the state cannot abdicate or outsource its responsibility to protect people in the state from cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment, no matter the setting that they might experience that in. I mean, I think that's where this judgment will go. The state fundamentally has to change its attitude. Fundamentally. And whatever about the kind of processes or systems that are put in place, until there's absolute clarity of lines of responsibility, lines of accountability and access to remedy, we cannot be confident that we're doing all that we can to protect children or indeed vulnerable adults in any setting. It cannot be left to third parties to hold or discharge that responsibility. The state holds it. The state must discharge it. It must transparently do so. It must provide for it in law. And our constitution and our courts must be in a position to vindicate that.
I want to move on and discuss further the whole idea of patronage, because that's a debate at the moment. When we had the comments by Rory Quinn at the weekend that he believed perhaps there was too much time being spent teaching religion in schools. Aon, is it your contention that the church needs to be taken out of the role of education in this country?
Well, see, Rory Quinn actually didn't say that. And of course, what frustrates me when it comes to educational debate is that what Rory Quinn was actually talking about in his speech was about literacy and numeracy. Mm-hmm. And I would love if a show like this or any show would actually talk about literacy and numeracy a little bit more, because that's what I spend most of my time talking about, is literacy, particularly literacy and particularly educational disadvantage. But again, because of the nature of Irish public debate, the minister's asked a question after his speech about where would you find a time minister in a crowded curriculum, in a very, you know, crowded timetable, to deliver this literacy and numeracy strategy that you're talking about, because that's fundamentally what we're trying to do, is empower children to be able to read. And I don't think anybody should probably have a problem with that, even though 30% of children in disadvantaged areas have basic reading problems and 17.9% of Irish adults are functionally illiterate. Mm-hmm. That's actually what he was talking about. He makes a comment about the amount of time spent on religious instruction in the curriculum, in the timetable of the week, and perhaps some of that may be utilised for delivering literacy strategies. Now, anybody who knows anything about education knows that literacy or reading is something that goes through every single subject. It's not something you just do,
sure,
you know, for
in
half
isolation.
An hour,
okay, yeah.
In isolation. So it would feed into every single lesson. That comment explodes into the front page newspaper of the daily paper the next day, taken completely out of context, and all of a sudden the discussion is about the Labour Party or Rory Quinn trying to, you know, ban religion in Irish schools. So let's just roll it back a little
okay,
bit here.
But is it your
what
view
we're
that
talking about
the church
here,
shouldn't be involved in education
no,
at all?
My view on that is irrelevant, because we have a thing called the Irish Constitution. Now, people around this table have different views of what the Irish Constitution says and what Supreme Court rulings mean and what the European Court of Human Rights actually means when it comes to delivering Irish law in adherence to that constitution. But it's a constitutional right to have your child educated through a patronage of your choice. That's there. It's, you know, it's in black and white. We cannot change that. What we want is a partnership approach with all patrons. That you have a system, in every parish or every area where parents have a choice, which is very important, which underpins our education system, that if they feel that they are comfortable with a certain ethos or a certain patronage, that they would have the ability or the freedom or the access to education of that of what they're comfortable with. Now, my own personal view is that I have always found it strange, and I'm willing to discuss this with anybody without, you know,
that's what we're doing
as I say, it's listeners' letters being thrown around the place. In terms of education, I find it unusual that the Irish context has knitted religion and education together so tightly, because I believe that regardless of what your background is or your religion is, you should probably be able to go to the same school together. Hmm. Other people feel differently. The Constitution underpins their point of view. It doesn't underpin mine. And that what we're trying to achieve in partnership with the various churches and all different patrons and parents' bodies is a situation where nobody ever feels that the school that the child is being sent to, you know, is not in keeping with their ethos. And that's why, you know, we're in that partnership approach. And that's where we had the forum on patronage and pluralism. And, you know, we're making successes there. But I think that's to be reasonable. I think if you look at the Irish education system and look at the things that are, I know Breda thinks I'm talking too much, but you know, I just want to complete this one point. If you look at the Irish education system and look at the amount of time that's spent on things like the Irish language or things like religious education or things like literacy and things like numeracy, it's important for teachers who are trying to deliver all these things to have a sense about how they actually might actually be able to deliver them.
John Murray, what do you say to that? Because talk about parental choice and the need to feel that your ethos is being catered for in school. But the point that many parents make is that they don't have a choice. They have to go to the local school. And as we know, 90% of them fall under the patronage of the Catholic Church.
Well, I think moves are afoot to try and address that as far as we can, practically speaking. But the point that Eoin made there, and he seemed to be contradicting it at the same time, so I'm a bit confused about what he's saying, is that if parents have a right to have their children, insofar as possible, educated in a way that is in keeping with their worldview, their ethos and so on. And in a country like Ireland, which is pluralistic for sure, but a large percentage of the population are Christian and would like to have Christian education. In most cases, that's going to be Catholic schools. It makes sense that in this system, there would be a large proportion of Catholic schools, but it shouldn't be that all of them are Catholic, and no one's going to argue that, I think. There is room for change, for sure. But I think the minister has taken pot shots, I'd call it pot shots, at religion before. This isn't the first time. And why pick on religion as being the one to mention? Why not pick on PE, for example? Now, I'm not saying that you should. I would disagree with picking on PE. But you could say PE is the one to get rid of because it does nothing for numeracy or literacy at all. But the idea in primary school is you have a holistic education. It covers a whole range of things. Part of that's spiritual and part of that has got to do with religion, particularly for, you know, parents who want their children to be brought up with their worldview and so on. So you can't just mention religious education and expect that afterwards someone to say, well, he didn't really mean to be criticising religion.
He never actually
just
said
happened.
Get rid of, he never said that.
He mentioned religious education in primary schools.
No, hold on, let's be clear here. You said get rid of. He never said get rid of, ever. Not once, ever. So let's be clear about that. But let's be clear what he actually said.
Aon made a really interesting point there. He said, you know, there's no one in Irish education who thinks that, you know, that subjects are all in kind of discrete boxes and that there isn't an integrated curriculum. Well, Rory Quinn obviously doesn't know that because literacy can be delivered in the religious education section of the course as well as can be delivered anywhere else. Of all the subjects, I checked this in the primary school curriculum. RE officially gets 2 hours 30 out of 28 hours 20. That's 7% of the time. The only subject that gets less is PE, and there's no doubt there should be more time for PE, but languages, maths, science and social, art, they all get more than RE. And I think this is actually, if you ask me what this is about, I would say it's a massive distraction exercise because there is an example across the border which is showing us up big time, and it's Catholic schools across the border. They are doing brilliantly in the international testing. Someone described them as the new Finland. Finland used to be the par excellence. And they are doing exactly what we are doing. They have 2.5 hours for RE. They have the same allocation, some of them, for Irish. And they are doing brilliantly. And I'll tell you why. It's because they have invested in education. They have teaching assistants. A teaching assistant is as rare as a hen's tooth in an Irish school. They have invested in IT. They've invested in teacher training. While we have suffered cut after cut after cut after cut, and we're going to blame it on teaching RE, we have had a cut of 11% in the money per head per child across the board, primary and secondary. We've had cuts in posts so that there is nobody to take on roles within a school that are absolutely essential for the care of the children. We have suffered cut after cut after cut, and the reason that we have problems with our numeracy and literacy apparently has nothing whatsoever to do that. And it's cheap and it's easy to say we should cut the time for RE, but it's not respectful of people who actually want it. The practice of religion has dropped dramatically in Ireland, down to a level which a lot of countries in Europe would be thrilled with, but it's still much lower. But very interestingly, the European Value Study and the European ESS study found that there hasn't been a comparable drop in belief or faith. Mm-hmm. And this is very unusual. We're outliers in Europe in regard to that. So people want their school. I was at a meeting recently and a woman came up to me and said she had organised a First Holy Communion meeting for parents. And she said, which normally would get average kind of attendance. She went in there. It was packed to the gills with very anxious parents. The rumour had got out that this was one of the schools that was going to be divested, in other words, handed over to different patronage. Before they could get a word out about First Holy Communion, it was people standing up saying, you can't do that. We need you. We need you to educate our children. This is important to us. We don't really know how to do it well ourselves. We rely on you to prepare our kids. And so it was kind of, calm down, everybody. We're not divesting. And then it was like, oh, OK. This is a very deprived area, working class area. And I think people underestimate the affection that people have.
Okay, well, we'll hear from some parents in a minute, but just before we do, Colm O'Gorman, what's your view on this?
First of all, I think it's terribly sad if parents feel that they don't have the capacity to pass on their values and their faith or belief systems to their own children, and instead that they have to hand that over to somebody else because they feel so disempowered, perhaps, by the systems that we have in place at the moment. But I think that would be very sad.
I don't think that's
for the record, I actually don't think that this is in any way about getting the church or any church out of education. It's about getting the state in. And I would have some concerns that, you know, we'd have a bit of a throw the baby out with the bathwater moment here. There are very grave deficiencies in how we deliver primary education in this country, most of them related to the state's handoff approach, an exploitation of that system as opposed to its support for that system. I really hope...
It's not hands-off when it comes to curriculum and teacher education. It's completely hands-on.
I really hope that what we see as a result of the statement is the state becoming getting involved and supporting communities, whatever model of education or whatever patron choice they make. And I think that, that choice is part of our tradition, and I think we need to continue with it. But to truly and genuinely support the creation of an education system that provides a model of education for families and fundamentally for children that meets their needs. But the state can't continue to exploit the goodwill of communities, of parents and of parents groups who come together to found and establish schools. I mean, I'm very involved in the Educate Together model, a model that believes, by the way, that religious education is an important part of a child's education, but that should be education as opposed to instruction. A model that believes that religious instruction should happen outside of school, but absolutely be supported and cherished within the school environment if that's what parents want to happen, and that empowers parents to be part of that. It's a model that I genuinely believe in. And I have to say that my experience of being involved in the founding of our own school in Gorey, and I was chair of the board there for 7 years, was one of the most enriching experiences I've ever had. And it was a really powerful manifestation of communities coming together in a way to provide for their community and for their children in a really powerful way.
The state has to.
But I mean, regardless of the model, if they choose a Catholic model, I feel exactly the same way about it. The state, instead of exploiting that and dodging responsibility for what happens within schools and refusing to properly resource and fund schools, whatever the model, needs to step in and be properly responsible and accountable. This is not about getting the church out. This is about getting the state in.
But Audrey, there is a big problem with the way that the state is being brought in. They held a survey about, an online survey about divesting. And basically, if you boil down the figures, one in five parents who actually had children in school responded. Of that percentage, one third actually wanted a change. So you're talking tiny, tiny figures. And I'm not against those tiny figures. I'll deal with that in 1 second. But it would be the equivalent if you had 90 students in a hall and you said, who wants the windows open? And six people put their hands up. And then the Department of Education put a huge press release out saying massive demand for ventilation in schools.
A third of the people who responded, and we can only listen to those who respond. If people choose not to respond, they're not responding.
But a third of people who responded
said that they want to change. So therefore, we should be providing.
Can I just deal with that? But I can make it myself. I absolutely believe that those people should be provided for. But it is actually not as simple as it's being presented. Because looking at this, at the figures of a particular town, and what it was right across the spectrum from junior infants up to sixth class. You wouldn't have got a full class right across the spectrum of 30 kids in a particular area. So what do? You divest a school in which you have an entire school? Do you divest part of a school? This is not ill will. I want to see diversity. I think diversity is good for all of us. It's good for
I just get depressed when somebody starts using maths, and playing around with figures. The point is that for the first time, this government and this minister in particular has gone to certain communities around the country and said, what do you think about patronage in your area? And what came back in the vast majority of surveys, if not all the surveys, was people wanted a choice of patronage. And people said quite clearly, in most, if not all, the surveys, that the Educate Together model was something that they had an interest in. Now, this sort of, investigation of the figures is something that... There's a deliberate Iona Institute way of looking at figures and manipulating them for their own ends. If you just listen to me for a second, what was asked was, is there an expression of interest? What you're expecting is that 100% of people who reply will say, we all want to Educate Together. What we asked for was... Hold on.
Just finish your point,
Ian. And I need to come back on that.
Now, secondly, the point is that we asked for, we can't hear everyone talking together. We asked for an expression of interest, and in every survey, there was an expression of interest.
By some people.
By a tiny number.
It's just happened again.
It's a real demand.
Now, I will give you, you gave me the story about the... The school meeting, and everybody worry about divesting, and that's fine. I completely accept that. And religious education is very important to a huge amount of people in this country, and it's the value system I grew up with, and it's something I defend a lot.
in my own life. But I have people coming to me saying, I have to baptise my child.
And that's ridiculous. Unless, well, I don't agree with it. I'm sorry, Eoin. I'm agreeing with you. Don't
well,
panic,
just let me finish.
I'm agreeing with you. I think it's ridiculous.
Just let me, finish my point, please. And we'll leave the darlings out of it. Thanks.
Sorry, I apologise for that.
They come to me and say, you know, my child is four. I have no interest in baptising my child. I have no religion. But yet, my local school, I cannot get my child into my local school.
That's a failure of provision.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a number of different scenarios in every situation, in every part of the country.
If I could just say one thing very quickly in terms of new initiatives and new schools starting, and I can talk here from practical and personal experience. When we set about funding the Educate Together school in Gorey, we had 17 children enrolled for the first year, right? 5 years later, it was the second largest primary school in the area.
Which is fantastic.
So you know, it takes time for people to believe in the possibility of something different.
Actually, if
you genuinely believe in diversity of service and of provision, then we have to get in and provide an opportunity to experience diversity.
No argument.
And that means that we don't then challenge when surveys came back that say there is a number of people within a particular area who want to see a difference in provision.
Okay.
Support the provision and don't dispute the figures. There's no reason for that.
I'm disputing the Department of Education spin, which said there was a major demand for it. That's what I'm disputing. But, you know, quite often Catholic schools or Catholic parishes don't put themselves forward for schools because they feel there's already too many Catholic schools. I know of one parish where that happened, where there's parental demand, and they said there is a need for an Educate Together school. We're not going to put our hat into the ring. And there's only twice in the past 26 years that Catholic trusts have put their hat into a ring for a secondary school. They were in Carrigaline and Mulholland. And the figures are very, very interesting because Le Caler, which represented the Catholic Trust, this is a really rigorous thing. This is not an online survey. You have to provide the name of the child, to provide where they're currently attending school is really rigorous. Mm-hmm. There's no fluff, there's no waffling. Le Caler got 566 parents wanting to sign up for it. There was Educate Together got 264, and the VEC, now the EETB, got 98. In Carrigaline, there were 774 parents who wanted the Catholic model. In the Educate Together, there were 320. In that case, they opened up two schools.
Okay.
They opened up one of each.
Sorry, there's no fluff or waffle in the Department of Education survey.
Well, look, I want to hear some of the parents, because
parents
we went out and spoke to Richie Byrne, went out and spoke to some parents today outside St Mary's Primary School in Ballantyre in Dublin, and he asked them if they supported the church's role in their school.
I think the problem really is that people don't have a choice. In some areas, there's no alternative to the local Catholic school, which is a problem if you don't want your child to grow up as a Catholic.
Are you picking up your daughter from this school here?
I am.
So she must be in junior infants at this stage.
She is.
Was it important that there was a religious bent to the school here?
We are Catholic, but to be honest with you, we did consider an Educate Together school as well. So we just decided at the end of the day, this is the nearest school, we'd heard good things about it and we would go with it.
And was it important when you're enrolling your daughter at the school here that the church did have an influence, that the Catholic Church played a part in this?
Not hugely, no.
So why did you enrol her then?
It's actually complicated. We had just moved up from Cork and we were living nearby, and we just came to see would there be a place in the local school, and there was.
Do you think they have too much power, the church, over the schools?
I think they probably play a stronger role than they ought to.
It's my granddaughter who attends the school. My whole thing would be the way the church is on gay marriages. Like, they're a bit behind the time, and we're trying to bring our children up now to accept people as equals. They're not great role models for children.
You're picking up your daughter here from the school here.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, did the church have a role in this school here?
Absolutely, yeah.
Really? Is it important?
It is important, yeah. Certainly for primary school anyway, maybe less so for secondary school, you know. But I'm glad the church is, it's right next door to the school, so I'm glad the church is involved, and I think it's important for them, the different stages in their life with their communion and their confirmation. Church is still a big part of the community, even though I don't go every Sunday. But even in our own school, there's different religions, Muslims or Protestants or any other religions in the classroom, that's fine too, you know.
If this school here was, the power was transferred over to another patron, would that be a good thing? Would you be welcome that?
I would welcome it, yeah.
Really?
I don't think it'll ever happen, but I would welcome it as well. I see that as good change.
So you're Muslim?
Yes, yeah.
And it wasn't an issue for you that this is run by the Catholic Church?
No, not. Yeah, it doesn't matter for... But she allowed to go to the church, but she doesn't make a lesson or you make something, just to play, you know.
Yeah.
And the basket away, you know.
Or the praise.
You don't do the prayers?
No.
What's important to you is the education, is it?
Yeah, just all the education, yeah, for everyone, you know.
It's for me.
Okay, sorry.
I don't think there are enough non-Catholic or non non-religious places available. That's something I wonder about. You know, I do wonder, are they spending too much time on religion? And certainly I went to a Catholic school and I remember spending a huge amount of time learning about religion. You know, I wonder, is it something that should be pushed more into the afternoons or extracurricular?
Yeah, I don't know who else would be the best person to hand it over to, so...
So the devil you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
The views there of some parents in Ballantyre today. John Marie, Archbishop Martin, talked about this last year, and he made the comments that insecurity about one's faith is at the root of fundamentalism. And he says that adds a dimension to the conversation that will challenge some Catholics in a novel and possibly discomforting way. And he made the point that the system of school patronage is changing and there mustn't be a reluctance to accept that. Do you agree with him?
Well, I think everyone's going to agree that there's a need for change, but in particular circumstances, you can understand why people might want to change. They might be happy with what's already there. If you're a teacher working in a school and you like the way it's going, the fact that you don't want change, I think it's a bit unfair to say that because you're a fundamentalist or you're insecure or something wrong with you. You know, it could be that that's a reason why, but until we go out and find out what the actual properly find out, like what Peter was saying there, find out exactly what the numbers are. It's all kind of anecdotal and just impressions and so on. But to make actual decisions, financial decisions about schools and new schools and divesting schools that are there already, has to be done as accurately as possible.
How did we make those decisions in terms of the system that we put in place? So if that rationale is to be applied to how we develop further schools, where was that rationale when the current system was being devised?
I don't really think there's any big deal in discussing history here, Colin. Let's discuss the future. That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
If we go back to 1831, it'd be a very different system than the one we have now, because it was one that fundamentally recognised and respected that...
The aim of the 1831 was to produce a happy British child. That was the aim of the 1831. It's in the textbooks. They talked about Dublin as a pleasant city within the empire.
My basic point is that it's a bit rich when one patron, and by the way, remember, I'm supporting the notion of diversity of provision, including Catholic schools. So I'm not opposed to the notion of religiously managed schools, but to suggest that somehow we're going to dispute the notion that people want choice, or that we should be looking at choice, or that we need fundamental change, whilst at the same time not acknowledging that the level of the monopolisation of the Irish primary school system in particular is the result of agency capture by the Catholic Church and a handover of responsibility and authority by the state to the Catholic Church.
I think you'll find
that a group of parents about 30 years ago in Dalkey started the debate when they tried to open the first ever multi-denominational school and got massive resistance and aggressive and violent resistance from the establishment, including the Catholic Church in that regard.
Aggression and violence are not confined to any one sector in Irish society.
I don't think they are at all, Breda. That was my point at the beginning of this conversation, actually, when we started the programme.
Let's not go back there now. We're nearly at the end.
But my point is, nobody owns our education system and nobody has a right to control or monopolise it. And the notion that we might...
We should try and establish what the need is.
And we will establish that need when we recognise that there's a significant need for change, and we recognise that we have a fundamentally flawed system because there was a monopolisation of that system and an enforcement of that system on a population,
okay,
whether they wanted something different or not.
Then.
Okay.
What's the
final
next
word,
step?
John Murray?
Not just that we need change. We have agreed on that. We're not arguing about that. It's... Where? How much? What are the details?
Well, I think parents in Ballantyre gave you an idea of that.
You can't just decide that based on your impressions.
Breda, we got a text. Educate Together got 1,300 expressions of interest in Dublin, 15, not 200.
Not from parents. That was from all over Dublin. It was all over Dublin. It wasn't from one particular area where parents who had children in the schools in the area expressed an interest. Okay. That's quite a different thing. Yeah. And I'm delighted they got their school.
Great. Well, look, thank you all very much indeed for coming in and taking part in our discussion tonight. Eoin O'Riordan, Colm O'Gorman, Breda O'Brien and John Murray. We're back at 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, from all of us, good night.